F2. Number 2A.
I stopped where I was saying that one of the statements in the textbook always impressed me, because there Mrs. Eddy said that the time cometh when the spiritual origin of man, the divine science, which ushers Jesus into human presence, must be understood and demonstrated. I guess always when we talk about the origin of man, we say, well, God is the origin of man, or my father and mother is the origin of mortals or so. Very seldom you hear anybody mentioning and thinking in that dimension that divine science is the origin of man. Because man, as a compound idea, certainly has its origin in the principle of science, in divine science. And if we say God is the origin of man, that's certainly true, and Mrs. Eddy will say so also. But that's when she speaks about the world, not about science, the first dimension, not the fourth dimension. But what we have to see is that we always see all four dimensions, the whole garment of truth, and not just one aspect of it. And living in an age of science as we do, we jolly well have to get down sometime and see that man originates in science, in divine science. And that's what we tried to do this week. We tried to give birth to the fact of the true man through science, and not through anything else, through our understanding of what science is. If you understand divine science, you can give birth to your true manhood. You don't need to have somewhere an indefinite God up in heaven, of which we say, oh, he is a good father, he has created me. Let's give birth to science. We are living in the century of science. We shouldn't go back to the and stay in the Old Testament. We shouldn't go back and stay in the prophetic era of the Christ. We shouldn't go back and stay in the Christianity era of Jesus and the Apostles. We should stay in our age, the age of science. That's where we are, and from which we have to work out our ultimate perfection. So, I would like to take with you that most important paragraph in Mrs. Eddy's textbook, which she calls scientific obstetrics. Because if we can see the science of obstetrics, the science of giving birth, then we have understood something about that divine science which ushers our true manhood into being. We don't care very much about the mortals. That we know how that was ushered into existence. We want to see that origin which ushers our true manhood into being, and that's science. So let me take on page 463 that paragraph on scientific obstetrics and just see how she develops that thought. She says, teacher and student should also be familiar with the obstetrics taught by this science. She says quite definitely that the science of birth, can one say the science of birth in English? The science of bringing forth, you see, that is, must be taught by a science. So let's see what the order of unfoldment is. Now, you see, I like this sentence already because she says that teacher and student, both, not just the student, teacher and student, must be familiar with. You must really know it. You must be really familiar with it. We just come, read it superficially, and say, well, that's a very nice paragraph. That's jolly nice there. No. We must really be familiar with. We must be familiar that we must feel one with this science of obstetrics that is going on hourly, daily, year in and year out. To attend properly, we have to attend it. You know what attend means? When one is just always on the go, when one is just always ready, not just a quarter of an hour before going to bed and have a nice thought, but to attend properly, always there to tend and tend, to be a true shepherd, be a true shepherd to the idea of man that is going to be born within us. That's the shepherd. To attend properly the birth of the new child or divine idea. What is being born is the idea of the epistle. Sometimes you are working on another problem, it's an idea. You can apply it to any idea. So to attend properly the birth of the new child or divine idea, you should so detach mortal thought from its material conception that the birth will be natural and safe. You see, we all would like a new idea coming to birth. We all would like that this birth takes place safely, without crisis, without birth throes, that without travail, that it is born safely. Well, it can be born safely. And it always is born safely if that order in here is obeyed. She says, will only be born naturally and safely if we detach mortal thought from its material conception. Now, these are a few words, but it's the whole universe. The whole universe. If you pray on this earth every day, you just ask yourself which material conception should be laid down. How much of mortal suggestions are coming up in our consciousness which are mortal, material, human, restrictive, and which put forth all sorts of suggestions why this birth shouldn't go on. So what I do is, as I go through these sentences or statements, I just put away all material conceptions. You see, if we want to give birth this week to this wonderful idea of the manhood in us, well, let's put away all material conceptions. There may be hundreds of them. Let's put away that this birth is dependent on our age. That's a material conception. That it is dependent if you are young or old, a male or a female, if you are a man or a woman, if you are educated or not educated, if you have done a lot of study or little study. Let's put that away. Let's put away any suggestion within ourselves that tries to object a natural and secure birth. Each one of us has different objections within himself. The one says, I have no time. The other says, I'm too old. The other says, I'm not clever enough. I have not understanding enough. You see, these are all material conceptions. At home, what I do, I write them right down. As I pray on this, then all those material objections will come up in consciousness. Because any pure thought will uncover any impure thought. So when our heart is pure and just longs to give birth to a right idea, well, that purity will uncover within us all that tries to obstruct the birth. So write them down. if you like, because you will see they are legions. They are just legions. It's just hundreds of suggestions why we should not be able to give birth to the true idea. Why we should not be a Mary that can give birth to a Jesus, to a Savior, to the saving idea of manhood. Write them down. Just face those conceptions, material conceptions. Then, when you face them, and when you, as she says, detach mortal thoughts, when you see that all these suggestions have nothing to do with the birth, that they cannot hinder the birth, that cannot obstruct the birth, that they cannot retard the birth, that they cannot bring a crisis in that birth, that they cannot chemicalize any birth. When we see that, then we give place and room to the one spirit, that which has no opposite. Spirit is that which has no opposite. Then we see that all that's going on is that spirit is expressing itself, classifying, individualizing, identifying itself to us. Then the birth will be natural and safe. That's the wonderful. To see again that enormous law of mind, spirit, soul. First you have to tend the idea, that's mind. Then comes spirit, says separate. Lay down all the false material conceptions. All that tries to obstruct the natural development and unfoldment of a spiritual idea. And then comes the third, which is just precipitates itself on us, namely, the idea is safe and natural. There is no more a crisis, no more a struggle, no more any fermenting sense, chemicalizing sense. Spirit really dechemicalizes everything. Then, when you see that, she goes on and says, though gathering new energy, it gathers new energy. It needs a whole man. It's the gathering of new energy. One really has to have that devotion to the spiritual, that love for the spiritual, that trust in the spiritual. That's the energy, the divine energy that is needed. And though it's gathering new energy, this idea cannot injure its useful surroundings. We have to see that because the claim of mortal mind is always that if we devote ourselves to the spiritual idea in any way or shape and form, that it can hurt something, that it can hurt our family, that it can hurt a friendship. But if I go to a summer school, it can hurt my business. But if I go to that summer school and devote myself to the spiritual idea, I may lose a job. I may lose this or that. I may get into trouble in this or that way. I guess each one, if he prays about it, he knows that these arguments come up. That the arguments are always that if we devote ourselves to God, that we lose something. If that argument wouldn't be there, we would all devote ourselves to God from morning to night. But we don't because of this, that the argument is, and it's a lie, and it's I nearly said something very bad, it's a lie. A devotion to God should deprive us of anything. That's a lie. A very obstinate lie. But it's a lie, just the same. But if we begin to realize the positive sense of this suggestion, namely, that if we devote ourselves to the spiritual, that we can only gain. We can only gain. And that will only bless everything. And that it just cannot injure its useful surroundings. What it does injure everything which is unuseful in our surroundings. That it does. Thanks God it does. It injures any unuseful surrounding, a spiritual idea. A spiritual idea just can't be bothered with anything that is unuseful in a true man's life. So it can only take away from us that which is anyway of no value, which is very comforting. So a spiritual idea has not a single element of error. And this truth removes properly whatever is offensive. See, if we would take this sentence every day and love it and see its truth and trust its truth, then we would lose a lot of fear and uncertainty, and we would stand for the idea, joyfully stand for the idea, knowing that this idea can only bless us, only bless us. I remember when I had that argument naturally with the Mother Church when they excommunicated us and so on at that time. The argument was that we will go down the drain within a few months. We lose our health, we will lose our jobs, we lose our wealth, our riches, everything. Well, if a spiritual idea is right, it only gives us more. And if we have the love to stand for a new idea, for a progressive idea, for an idea which God likes and which God loves, then we have the duty to accept that it will only bless us. And I had never a more prosperous time than after that, because every day I just love to know how God will love me for the stand I take. That God just will love everyone who loves God and who makes a progressive step, and that all those arguments which say that if you do this and that, you will be punished is just rubbish. Just rubbish. God is love, and He just loves us for everything we do in the right direction. But we have to claim that law. It's a divine law, and we have jolly well to claim it. That's why she sees that here. She says, well, we must see that the spiritual idea, you see, has no single element of error, and that this truth removes properly whatever is offensive. The way just brightens and brightens, gets wider and wider. The new idea, she says, conceived and form of truth and love is clad in white garments. Yes, the idea naturally must be born of truth and love. That's naturally necessary. If we try to give birth to an idea because of self-aggrandizement, of being a big shot, and so on, then it isn't born of truth and love. It isn't born of that truth which conceives of the standard of true manhood, embosomed in love. Then when we see that, then we are safe, completely safe. Then a new idea is clad in white garments. Well, what does it mean if an idea is clad in white garments? It is as it speaks of the seven huge whites. I think it's in Christ and Christmas. Of the seven huge whites, we see that an idea which is born of truth and love, an idea which is born because we love the truth, and because we see that truth as a progressive idea in the plane of love, then it has all that is necessary for this idea. It's clad. It's embosomed, it's surrounded, it's nurtured by all the ideas, by the seven huge wives. Therefore, this idea will never let us down. It will always bless us. So wonderful. The moment we stand clearly and purely for an idea, we just have all. We just have all. It's only when we see to totter in metaphysics. You know what see to tottering is? All right. When we see to totter in metaphysics, you know, that's the dangerous part. Then, at one time, we are up, and the next time we are down. But when we just stand for a true idea, for that which we are, divine beings, that's the most wonderful thing we can do. Because then we clothe ourselves with all that God has. It's beginning. Now, this is a very nice sentence. You see, this is really where our mother sense must come in. It says, its beginning will be meek. That's where the student usually holds and goes back. The student, when he sees something new, he would like to see it already big, very big. The signs of birth, as Mrs. Eddy shows it in various ways in her textbook, is always the beginning is meek. It's small, unpretentious, one hardly notices it, it's hardly seen, perhaps even hidden. The world doesn't acknowledge it, the world doesn't recognize it. It's small. But every mother who has a child and gets a child, she knows that the beginning is only the beginning. And if it is me, she knows that that child can't help to grow. It's the law of unfoldment that says that child, that meek beginning, has all in itself, its clad in white garment, has all in itself to fulfill its purpose. So its beginning is meek, but its growth is sturdy. And you will feel that. You will feel that its growth is there. You can't go back anymore afterwards. Just can't go back anymore. It just takes you along. And nothing can stop it anymore. And its maturity is undecaying. See, that's always the beauty of something which is born metaphysically through spirit. That its end is eternal. I don't think you can say that, but that it eternalizes itself, that there is no end to it, that it goes on and on and on. Whereas all other things that just start with human thinking, they come and go. Everything in mental metaphysics comes and goes. It comes and inspires you a little bit, and then it goes. Whereas once an idea has been born through the spiritual qualities, spirit duly feeding and clothing every object, its duration is eternal. It's undecaying. Think what we are doing. You know, if we build up a family, well, that's nice, but it has an end. You can't stop it. It comes to an end. After 70 years, you go away and you have to leave the family behind. If you build up a business, well, that's also nice, and it's also demanding your best qualities, but it comes to an end. Everything on this human plane, good or bad, comes to an end. The idea never comes to an end. It's of the nature of eternity. Therefore, one can see why, once one has seen that the human and the material loses its attraction. Because it loses its value. And one begins to see, why shouldn't I work on something which is bigger, which is greater, which is more eternal, than to build on something which is anyway coming to a stop? Contemplations in love and in admiration and in valuation that builds within us a substance which is eternal, and which is able to make a separation and to let material concepts go by. When this new birth takes place, the Christian Science infant, she doesn't say the Christian Scientist infant, it's the Christian Science infant. It has nothing to do with a two-legged baby. It has to do with the divine baby, you see, with the idea. The Christian Science infant is born of the Spirit, born of God, and can cause the mother no more suffering. When we really give birth to a new idea, which at first is attacked, which at first will be obstructed, where at first we have perhaps some struggles, that doesn't matter. What we can see, and what we always must see, is the end right from the beginning. Namely, that it will honor the mother. It will sustain afterwards the mother. It will speak for the mother. We can be quite sure that we don't have always to defend our baby. The baby will speak for us. The divine idea of science will speak for us. We don't have to speak for the idea of science. It will speak for itself and for the mother, and will cause the mother no more suffering. It will only cause us joy and satisfaction. By this we know that truth is here and has fulfilled its perfect work. See, this is a paragraph which I would like you to consider over and over and over, to take it, to consider every sentence, to consider what every word means, what it means for you, what it means for our individual situation. I have studied that paragraph, I have loved that paragraph for the last 25 years, day after day. There haven't passed many days in the last 25 years that I didn't love that paragraph. And whenever I began to study in the textbook or do any study in the Bible or anything, I would take that paragraph. And I rather would spend a lot of time on that paragraph than on the study itself. If I would study the synonyms or anything or any book in the Bible, and if I would have an hour to do it, perhaps I would spend half an hour on this paragraph. Because what's the use of reading? The use of reading is mind. It's the standpoint of mind. And you can read about mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. And you can read about the word Christ, Christianity, and science. But you always read or study about the seven. The standpoint you take, and that's what that is, always mind. Mind is that which reads, which studies. That's the qualities of mind. Reading, studying, searching, seeking. You see, these are the ideas of mind. And it doesn't matter if you study about spirit or soul or principle of life, you are yourself always in mind. That's too narrow. Then we don't go the way. We only think along the way, but we don't go the way. The way is the word. Mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love. That's the word. I'm the way, Jesus said. Well, to go the way means that we go the way, not that we look at the way. As long as we just read and listen to talk and listen to tape and read books and study, that's right. And I'm the first one, I think, who know that I do a lot of study and that I ask that people study and that the students study. But I'm aware where within the whole system of being this study belongs to. Namely, it only belongs to mind. So if we go the way, then we must inwardly go from mind to spirit, at least. And spirit is not studying. The ideas of spirit are not studying, reading, listening, to me, to other people. Spirit has the qualities of loving what you have studied, of valuing what you have studied, of adoring what you have studied, of worshipping what you have studied, of having that warmth and tenderness and awe of what you have studied. That spirit, and that's the life-giving quality of mind.